Good afternoon. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio on the Difference Radio Network. This is Janetta Haim with Beyond the Heart, broadcasting to you from Sydney this Saturday afternoon at 3 p.m.
Today we're going to look at yet another modality called Core Energetics, and I have with me today Leslie Hughes, who is a passionate leader and inspires people around her to be the best they can on their journey. Leslie is one of the most senior members of Core Energetics here in Australia and an experienced body-mind psychotherapist in somatic psychotherapy. And Leslie, I'd like to welcome you here today.
Thank you, Janetta. It's an honour to be here.
I'm very glad that you could come up from... Whereabouts is your practice? Can you please tell everybody where you are?
I'm located on the Central Coast, between Sydney and Newcastle, and I also have a practice in Annandale one day a week.
And we will be giving everybody the details of how they can contact you at the end of the show with regards to your website and your email. Now, Leslie, can you just tell the people out there a bit about yourself and how you your journey went along that you became interested in Core Energetics?
Right. Well, in 1997, I met Robert Kirby, who was a Core Energetics therapist from America. I happened to go to one of his talks, and I was just so inspired. Everything he had to say relating to the core principles just made so much sense to me, because I had a story, but I didn't know how to get beyond it, and I didn't know how why I felt like I felt. I had been struggling for some time with anxiety and depression and didn't really have the answers to why that had happened. So to hear someone as inspiring and motivated as he was, that gave me, that he just shone a light straight inside of me, and it just went, right, you know, this man is going to help save my life. And I really feel that this work is extremely powerful, and this is what I'm here to do.
And what about before coming to Core Energetics? What had you been doing in your life?
Well, I'd raised my three daughters, and I'm married to my husband Steve for 36 years. I had followed many modalities. I'd done, you know, crystal healing, numerology, colour therapy courses, Reiki. I was basically on a journey to finding out who I was and why I felt like I did. And that journey started when I was 30. I actually had a breakdown, and I was really struggling. So in many ways, they say these things are a blessing, because it made me really look at my life, and I certainly wanted it to be better.
And you've certainly come a long way since then, haven't you, young lady? Leslie, can you please tell us, for those people that are listening and don't know what Core Energetics is and have never heard about it before, what is Core Energetics?
Well, it's a profound healing modality, but it's also been called an evolutionary process. So it's very much looking at our soul's journey, our journey into our family, you know, the journey of the family lineage and all that that brings. And we're really working on, you know, who are you, what has happened for you, and, you know, when things that haven't been positive have happened, we basically get extremely hurt and we start shutting down. Now, this, according to Core, we look very much from conception to the first 7 years of life, and this really creates who we are. So we start back in that area and we say, okay, what happened? We can actually see from the body. The body is even shaped by those years, those very formulative years, which is so important. And, of course, as parents, we don't really know that at the time. We don't know any better way. So we start looking at people in that time of their life, and we start looking at, what do I feel about what happened? Am I full? Am I empty? Why am I so alone? And once you start getting the answers and you address the negativity that's attached to some of the feelings, it gets the flow of the energy back in the body, because all the feelings, anything that you've stored, is stuck in your muscles and your cells. So my job is to really charge and discharge the negativity so that your flow comes back and more energy starts to go to your heart. Your heart has neurons just like your brain. It can think and feel. And when we get the flow back into the heart and the heart is feeling, it's like we have another source of information, and it is so correct. The head is the seat of fear, but the heart is the place of love.
So when you're saying that this all starts when we're young, before the age of seven, I guess what you're saying is that the conclusions we come to as children somehow write energetically into our bodies and into, well, our whole being, and leave some sort of a pattern. Is that what you're talking about?
That's exactly what I'm saying. There's five different structures and different times that are really important years in a little being's life, beginning from, being in the womb of the mother and feeling, am I wanted? Now, this is just the perception of the child. But if that child perceives that my mother doesn't seem happy, she might be sick, she may be struggling, and if they don't feel wanted, that just has a huge impact straight away on that baby, and they come into the world basically split and not really wanting to be here and not really trusting the mother. So, there's definitely different levels and ages where we need parents to be present, we need parents to be able to give children space, we need parents to handle their children's sexuality wisely, and especially that is just a hornet's nest right there.
That's right. There's no textbook for that, is there?
Absolutely not. Absolutely.
Which textbook do I pick up to train my child about sexuality?
Yes.
Yeah.
But believe you me, if they are uncomfortable with their own sexuality and with the broadening sexuality of their child, what do they do? They shut down the child. They may shame them. Or they may exploit them a little bit and make them a prince or a princess, which leads them to thoughts and feelings about themselves that just is very incorrect, and sometimes empowered when they shouldn't be empowered, sometimes totally rejected when they're still loved, but the parent just can't deal with the shame.
So what I think we need to perhaps clarify for listeners out there, what we're saying in terms of the parents, some people might be jumping to the conclusion that they're bad parents with what we've just said. So can we clarify that area for people that are listening, please?
Definitely it's not the fault of the parent. I mean, parents are just where they've come from themselves, from their own family, and we are going to do right and wrong. And every child and every soul that is born has really high expectations. Now, in those expectations, they have needs and wants. And if parents, for some reason or other, are unable to give them, they straight away take that as a personal affront and can see it sometimes as like, my mother cannot really give me the time when I need feeding. She's busy and the phone keeps ringing and I want her. So straight away the child can start feeling a bit unloved, a bit abandoned. So they can turn that in on themselves and suddenly feel that they're hated. So this has a huge impact because, of course, they take this feeling into life. It's just a perception.
So what you're saying, if I've got it right, is a child, because they're a child, come to form their own misconceptions about life. Yes. And they don't realise that mum and dad need to go to work and need to do this and that, and then change that perception into something that it is not the case.
There are times where definitely parents do not treat their children the way they should be treated.
Oh, yes, of course.
And people are abused, mm-hmm. They're hurt, and they are really traumatised. And this is my job, is to actually get down to the crux of their history and see what happened. And it may be on a very unconscious level, but of course it is stored in the body. So it's really empowering to be able to go, what happened to you? What do you feel? What are you struggling with? And allow them to get to what I call the lower self, which is, which is a defensive place that is builds up around the heart that says, I don't want to be hurt again. Because quite often, there's a lot of very, very positive parents. But there are parents that don't have the capacity to give the child what they need. And that really does leave very empty voids, places of depression.
Yes.
Anxiety, they're not safe.
Mm-hmm,
yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's really to go back into that time and see what happened then. You know, were the parents able to be there? You know, what happened to make this person the way they are? So it's actually really helpful. It's just helpful information. It's not like we stay stuck on parents, but we're just feeling. How do you feel about that?
Right, right, right. Yes. Oh, thank you for clarifying that. Leslie, what transformations have you witnessed in your clients with this process?
I have seen so many transformations. One particular person, who I will call for today, Lorna, came to my practice with really high levels of anxiety and so much self-judgment, living a very alone life. And, you know, she came from a family that, you know, is a loving family, but they came with such rigidity and so many rules and regulations that this person could not actually grow into an autonomous being. When it's a time when the child's about three and they want to explore, mm-hmm. there was no exploring to mm-hmm. be had. Everything got shut down, and then she had to be perfect. So she just learnt, she was the third child. So for Lorna, the best thing was to just swallow everything that she felt and just go inside. But she had strong feelings about this. So over time, I've been able to get her really grounded. That's a big part of the work, like get you really in your body and go, you know, how do you feel? What's your voice here? How do you feel that you couldn't be free?
And Leslie, can you just, if I could just stop you for a moment there, you used a word grounded. Now, if you could explain that to our listeners that perhaps aren't aware of what that term is.
Well, for us, this is what we start all our work with. It's extremely important because most people are more living in their head or the upper part of their body and their energy system. So to make people safe, I do a series of exercises or meditation. You know, it could be stomping, squatting, kicking. But it's very empowering in building the charge in the legs. The legs and the feet, they're the important thing. If you have energy in your legs and feet, you feel safe. So that's where I began.
So to get this energy in the legs, there's a series of exercises that people do. Now, I gather these are different to your standard exercises at the gym?
Absolutely. They're concentrated on a purpose. They're to put some stress on the feet and the leg muscles so that we can get the energy flowing, so that they can be touching the ground, feeling the ground, being closer to the ground and getting the energy flowing. And that can just make so much of a difference to people's perceptions. Yes, I have a series of exercises, and if anybody, you know, wants to come and work with me, you know, it's part of the therapeutic practice that they do these exercises daily.
Excellent, excellent. Now, getting back to Lorna, what yes. more can you tell us about her process?
Well, she's found a voice. Mm-hmm. She didn't have a voice. Her life is expanding, like she can go out now. She's got a circle of friends. Mm-hmm. She's experiencing adventure, jumping out of planes. And I think what I'm most excited about is how she is excited about herself. Because for her, good. Her life was contracted to such a point because her body was so contracted. More or less, you get locked up in your own body, and she didn't think she can change. But this work enables changes within the body with the release of the negativity and the feelings, and therefore she can go out into the world feeling more expansive, safer, and free to speak her piece.
So what you're saying, you said now her body was so contracted. Now, so mm-hmm. the energy, for those people who don't know a lot about energy, the energy in our bodies works when you talk about this contraction. What are you trying to say with that?
Well, that is part of her getting hurt in childhood and very much living with rigid, critical parents, which means that you have to, like, tighten up, become extremely perfect, do what I'm told to do. So you just shut shop, basically. And it's like you pull all yourself inside, and that's where you're holding. And you're just literally defending. I mean, your shoulders are up. You might have a very startled look on your face. You can see in people how they're struggling to hold. So that's what I'm saying, that as you work on the emotions, the body releases, it can come back to a more settled place, and therefore she can go out into in a more expansive way.
You were saying before that you can see this in the body. Can you give us an example of perhaps, you just said now where the shoulders go up, what is an example of perhaps one of these character defences, I believe you call them, and how the body looks, you know, how would you know?
Well, if I talk about an oral character, now the oral is someone who's been deprived quite often in childhood, and so they haven't got enough. And that deprivation shows in the chest area. It's kind of like a little bit concave at the top. Sometimes even between the breasts, there's like an indentation, which actually shows like a wound to the heart. And their shoulders quite often slope over and come around. And it's actually a protection saying, you know, don't hurt me again. They look somewhat collapsed, and sometimes they're quite depressed. So that's an example I could show you.
Okay. And how many of these different categories are there?
There's five.
There's five.
Mm.
And is it very distinct? Like, do we fall into one particular category, or is there a mix? I mean, how does it work?
We could have a little bit of each, but quite often we might have a predominant one or two characters, structures that we're really affected by.
And how is this helpful in perhaps helping somebody in their process, in their journey, knowing what they're in? How do you use it to assist the client?
Well, it actually tells me how that client may be running their life, because I know that if someone wasn't fed properly and was abandoned, that they are going to have this empty place. Now, this empty place, they're going to want it to be filled. And I know that they're going to have a way of trying to find love in the world. They're either going to be demanding it, or they're going to be giving it, hoping that they're going to have it returned. It just shows so well in the body, and that gives me an idea of what their personality. So their body shape tells me, okay, this is what their struggles may be. It also shows me what gifts that they may have. So for these particular people, as they start working through the oral wound of I'm not enough, they actually start to find the place of I am enough. And they're fuller. They're fuller of who they are. They don't have to go out of their world to get the energy. They build the energy inside of themselves.
And that's what the healing is actually all about,
isn't
it?
That's what our healing is about, mm-hmm. is making changes.
Mm-hmm.
But the tool is the body shows what has happened. People may tell me the story, and I hear the story, but at the same time I'm looking at their body and I'm understanding very empathetically, this person may struggle with this particular, as I say, emptiness, mm-hmm. depression,
mm-hmm.
collapse.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. So, okay, so how is the process? What is the process for somebody that's coming to you or anticipating coming to you? Couldn't you give them a bit of an insight as to what the process actually is that they would be doing with you? What would you be looking at?
Well, I'm looking at them as a person and how they present, and listening as well to what they're actually struggling with, because yes, they may have several of these character structures, but something may be, I think the most important thing is getting the inner ground, because if people didn't get it, they're not going to be safe to do any other kind of work. So it's building on getting them grounded, starting to feel like, what do they really feel? How can they get a voice? How can we charge this person up enough to get to some negative places that are holding energy? So it's like step by step, Janetta. I'm very respectful.
Yeah.
Each person, some people are ready to come in and say, I'm angry about this and that, and okay. But other people are terrified of their anger and rage. When they're a child, imagine if you showed your parents anger, it's like life or death. So that's actually what people have to face. But because they find this inner ground, like, so it's step by step, helping people in some way learn to grow up, to stand on their own two feet,
mm-hmm.
and feel what they need to feel.
And it sounds like I can also hear about a balance in there. As you're talking, the word balance comes to mind, them finding their own balance to some degree. Is that right?
Yes, well, I think if you're balanced inside of you, I mean, if you're carrying so much old baggage, it's like having a dirty basket of clothes inside, so to speak, that
mm-hmm.
really needs washing,
yes.
and you're wandering around with that every day, it is so exhausting. So for people to start releasing the negativity that's holding the energy down, the flow starts moving in their body. Like, we have an energy system that should come up the body and come down in a figure eight. Now, when we start holding and hiding feelings, we stop the flow. And little bit by little bit, it's like people's life force starts to die. Like you see people that are maybe only 30 and they might look 50 and you think, what has happened to that person? But with this work, you find a way of releasing the energy in the body. And the joy is when you look at them and you start to see the light coming back. It's like, my life's worth living. You know?
Yes, yes, yes. I get a lot of the people in my clinic as well that, you know, you see young people and, you know, they're in their 20s and, you know, a girl that comes to mind is, you know, in one of the sessions, a beautiful girl, beautiful figure, everything going for her, and she's sitting there and she's saying, I really hate myself and I hate who I am as a person. And she was telling me about how locked in she was to a job she hated and this whole process of I must do this and I must do that. And we get so much of it. What would you say to the people out there that are perhaps listening that are feeling anxious and depressed and to some extent hate where they're at? What would you be able to say to them now, perhaps in terms of this modality and working with
you? I'd say don't be afraid to come and see what's going on inside of you. This work can give you a deeper understanding. It's not to say it's not challenging at times to find out that we may not be 100% nice, but if we can confront the more negative parts of ourselves, the parts that even do self-hate, if we can confront that and really get to the truth of that, it's just so enlightening. Life can be better, believe you me.
Of course, and of course once we've confronted it, we've brought it into the light, so to speak, so it doesn't quite have the same power, does it?
It doesn't. It's visible. It's known. And to be honest, your self-esteem grows because previous to that, you're masking it because we can't go round in the world showing what we really feel because we want everyone to accept and love us. So we have to mask it. And to be honest, living in a mask is exhausting. So when we confront our own mask, with the help of a therapist, we're able to come into contact with these hidden, sequestered places, but our self-esteem grows because we know we're in truth.
That's right, that's right. And I'm actually glad that you added then with the help of a therapist because there is backup all the way, isn't there?
Absolutely, and I am there for my clients. I honour their journey, and you can't do it alone. We have blind spots. We think we can, but we can't. We really need someone else's eyes and ears and intention with it. You know, sometimes it's great to have a team.
That's right. It sure is. Okay, so Leslie, we've been talking about the patterns and the formative years of someone's life. Can you perhaps tell us a little bit more about the structure of a person's body? I'm sure the listeners would be interested to know perhaps how they fit into some of these structures.
So I'm going to start with the schizoid structure, which is the wound that happens in the womb before the child is born. The feeling is that their mother may be hostile. They have a lot of fear. They come to Earth and they're very ungrounded. They don't actually feel safe with mother, and mother represents the ground. So they're very ungrounded. They live in their head. They're quite often very, very spiritual beings. Can quite often have not a very uniform body and a little bit disjointed.
Mm-hmm,
it's like they've been fragmented in the womb, like so their body's actually been hit and they have a lot of splits and leaks, which is energy leaking, because they don't really want to feel. Part of them doesn't necessarily want to be here, and they live in their own world.
So what are the types of things that could have gone on with mother for this to happen?
Well, sometimes mother can be sick.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes mother may be in a very difficult relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes mother may have not wanted that baby.
Mm-hmm.
She might be really struggling. It might be child number six. And the child can feel all the feelings. And instead of that womb being a really warm, nurturing place, it becomes a very cold icicle. And I can only tell you that frozen is a word for the schizoid.
Right.
They look very frozen. They're terrified. They actually live in a lot of terror. And they quite often struggle just in doing day-to-day things that other people can do. And yet they might not have any understanding of why they might be like it.
So someone who is perhaps like this and they come along and they do some work with you, what can that process open up for them?
Well, they start to feel real because they're so frozen. They can't actually feel their body much. They can't feel their heart. They're fragmented. They're disconnected. So I get them more flowing.
Mm-hmm.
I get their heart more open. And above all, we get them grounded and safe. And they can start to feel, and they can bring their spirituality into the world. So it's actually, it's nearly like rebirthing, but it is not like rebirthing, but it's actually positively parenting and giving these people the feeling that they have every right to be here and that they can have a place.
And that feeling of safety, of course, is so important. I get a lot of clients, they just don't feel safe. And I mean, when we look at the things that are happening out there in the world and the negativity, it's sometimes understandable why people don't feel safe. But I guess if you have this trigger inside of you, all those things that are out there simply add to that. Is that right?
Overwhelm is the word for them.
Yes.
They just cannot, they don't have a great coping mechanism. They're traumatized.
Mm-hmm.
But little bit by little bit, building the flow and the energy with the grounding, with getting a voice, with being able to look at their beliefs, seeing some of their negativity, because believe it or not, they're actually quite annoyed underneath it all, that the feeling was that they weren't wanted. Once again, it's a perception. It may have been a correct perception or it may have been incorrect.
So what happens when they connect with that anger?
Well, they're allowed to emote it.
Mm-hmm.
Quite often schizoids would have a very deep scream because they've been a baby in the womb, more or less trapped,
mm-hmm.
feeling not wanted, feeling the coldness. So sometimes it's not even words, Janetta. It is just the energy moving and allowing. And if a scream is what is needed, that's what's allowed. And energy creates consciousness. So the more they move energy, mm-hmm. it's like their own lights go on.
Yes, yes. And what other types of structures of the body are there that can perhaps give insight as to what's happening with the person?
Well, I spoke to you earlier about the oral. Now, the oral is the baby that's just been born and up till about 6 months of age. It's very important that we can be present for our children, but to be honest, in this day and age, it is really difficult. But that child needs a lot. They need nurturing, they need safety, they need to be able to look at the mother's eyes and see that she's really there. And if this doesn't happen, there's once again a disconnect. There's a real neediness
mm-hmm.
that builds up.
Yes, and, yes.
And I think most people are ashamed of neediness. It's not a word they like to say. But when you look at it in the concept of this is a baby and the baby needs to be fed and to be warm, it's a really important phase, the first 6 months to a year. But if we're able to work with these people, once again grounding them, getting to feel their low energy and why they're low, you know, that because sometimes when they weren't given enough, it's like they don't even give themselves enough, and then they overextend. They're always trying to get love from other people. They're thinking, I wasn't loved by mum. That's their perception.
Right.
So they're looking for love. They're mm-hmm. like out there. I mean, you do hear people talk about people that suck energy.
Yes.
This would no doubt be an oral because they don't feel they've got enough. So at times they've got tricky ways of manipulating. So that's the thing that I'm doing. I'm challenging the mask that they may be putting out to the world that may show that they've got enough, but inside they're desperately trying to have themselves filled up by somebody else.
Right. So, of course, this is part of the human condition and we all carry some of these wounds. And those of us that carry these wounds are in turn parents. So what would you say about how important it is for us as parents to get help so that our children don't carry our pain?
If I could really speak from my heart, Janetta, I couldn't say enough how important it is.
Mm-hmm.
I realised this myself with my three daughters, even though I had the best intention in the world. there were certainly aspects of myself that I probably didn't do the best job that I could. Now, it's painful to see that, but I have really worked hard through this core energetics therapeutic process to really face these parts of me and work on the baggage, because children feel the baggage. They feel responsible. And it's just not fair. We cannot have our children carrying our baggage. They need to be free.
And, of course, they pick up our subconscious messages about rather what we're doing and the way we do things. They watch very carefully, don't they?
They are mirroring us every which way.
Wow.
We are their teachers. Mm-hmm. I can't underestimate how important being parents is. Like, read the books, go to courses, be present. Just know that this precious soul is just so attuned to you. You might just think this is just a baby, they won't be aware. But even in the pre-verbal stages where babies can't talk, they are feeling in the body.
So the baby that has these particular wounds, of course, grows into the adult, and this leaves its mark and a pattern, and it... Would you say it locks us into creating certain situations again and again in our life?
Absolutely. And it's usually, I find, especially with the oral, they're usually in this state of always giving love and wanting love back. But then if you say to the oral, do you love yourself? And they usually don't, because that wasn't mirrored to them.
Right.
So they're always giving more than they got. They're kind of putting themselves on a platter saying, I'll do all this for you, but please love me back. It's so devastating to see people doing this again and again, because it starts with finding the self-love. Because these children that didn't get enough and felt abandoned and not nourished usually don't feel terribly lovable. They can feel hated. So we have to work on these feelings that they have inside, that they've basically turned on themselves.
So they become the victim then?
They become the victim, and they stay stuck in this cycle.
And stuck in their own pattern and story to a certain degree.
Yes, and I mean, they're so attuned to the story. It's like, until somebody challenges it, and I suppose that's my job, then they become aware. This is part of that mask that mm-hmm. I was talking about earlier. But if we can remove the mask and say, okay, what's really underneath there? How do you feel about everything, particularly that happened early on? Do you think it would have been great if that, you know, how do you feel that you weren't given enough? And is this self-hate really the way it's supposed to be? Maybe you have feelings about other people, but you've turned them in on yourself. And life is looking pretty grey and black from this way.
So what you're saying is that there are certain types of processes that are there that will enable the person who feels a victim to let go of that story and heal at a deep level?
Absolutely. And really take responsibility for nourishing themselves and knowing that place of enoughness. I think self-care and nurturing is the way to start with an oral. And I must admit, I have a very strong oral wound.
Mm-hmm.
And I am learning still every day how important it is for me to tick my boxes and to look at self-love, and if I want love, give it to me first. And then from that place, I can be a better person. I can give more in my relationship with my husband and to my children, to my clients. I would like to start by giving you an overview of the five character structures. We've already talked about the schizoid, which was in the womb. The oral was in the first 6 to 12 months and the need for nourishment. Now we come to the masochistic structure, which is predominantly over-mothering, smothering, overfeeding, and intensity of potty training. And in other words, the child's outward nature gets somewhat squished, and this actually shows in their body.
So Leslie, you're saying this comes about from just the as some sort of a reaction of the child's perception to what perhaps a nervous mother would have?
A nervous mother, a controlling mother, someone that is intensely into mothering, which who may think they're
right.
a fantastic mother.
Right.
And they're not taking their eye off the child and they're keeping them safe and they want Johnny to have all this food, and but they're actually overfeeding them. They're force-feeding them.
Right. So, and it could come from that nervousness, you know, of my child's going to starve, for example.
Absolutely. They're going to starve. But what happens is they end up quite often building a very overcharged child, like whereas the oral's undercharged, they didn't get enough.
Right.
The masochist has got too much. It's too much intensity, too much mothering, too much smothering. And it actually shows in their body. They actually end up somewhat squished. You know, their neck is shorter, their middle torso is very squared, and their legs can quite often show they're very squat. And their feet and hands are big. So it's just an intense mother energy.
So how does this affect them in their lives as an adult?
Well, they usually internalize everything. They're really stuck with pleasing because they had to please mum. They had to do everything that she wanted because otherwise she might be upset.
Right.
So
right.
they're very interested in what other people think about them. I'll please you. But where is the part of themselves that really doesn't want to please everyone?
And Leslie, you mentioned there are a few other character defences. What are they?
The other two, the first is the psychopath. So this is very much about, the child's about 3 to 4 years of age. They get a certain amount of power. It's not real power, but it's nearly imagined. But they might be a special child. They might be the prince or the princess.
Okay.
And they're built up a lot, but there's a lot of expectation there. But as fast as they're built up, they're smashed down quite often. It's like mother could build the prince up. Well, the father might not like that, so he'll bring the prince down. He'll be thinking that. So as they grow into adulthood, they have this sense of power and enforcement and authority. But at the same time, they have a very wobbly base, you know.
Right. So this comes from like a push-pull situation in the family dynamic. Is that what you're saying?
Pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much. It's a specialness. Sometimes it can come from both parents, but it's a false sense of power.
So they perceive themselves as special adults?
They can. But because of the situation, they kind of know that they're not special. It's like special 1 minute and not special the next.
Right.
Lack of trust. In the end, they actually don't trust. They have a lot of energy in the upper part of their body because of this place of being built up.
Right.
But as I say, so they might have a lot of energy in their shoulders. They're a bit like a coat hanger. Everything's built up. But if I look down to their legs and the energy, there's not much there.
Right. And the other character defence?
Is the rigid. Now, the rigid is like about 3 to 7 years of age, the time where the child is coming into puberty. The child has felt very loved by the parent of the opposite sex, but suddenly when this child becomes a little bit sexual and a little bit attracted to mum or dad, you know, the parent quite often doesn't know what to do with that. So they reject the child, they push them away.
So is that because the parent has some sort of a uncomfortableness about their own sexuality sometimes?
Quite often that can be the case.
Mm-hmm.
They have their own shame and they don't want to they don't know what to do with it. I mean, it might actually, you know, sometimes they might even feel a little bit of a pull to this child, and they know that it's not right. This is their son or daughter. So they create a, they push the child away and they create a split, and it really damages the heart. It's like the child loses
yes.
all the heart energy.
And feels rejected. Mm-hmm.
And it's a difficult wound because from that place on, they can never really trust the opposite sex. It brings difficulties in relationship because it's like, can I really trust you to love me?
So what you're saying is they may attract a partner who is trustworthy, but yet in them, due to their wound, they've got that, well, I don't really trust you.
I don't trust you, and I don't know whether I'm going to fully open my heart. Because for a rigid to feel the pain of that original rejection, mm-hmm. I mean, part of the work is actually going back into that wound and feeling, oh, how did it feel when Dad or Mum pushed me away? You know, for some people it would feel like a death, but unfortunately they stay there and then they don't feel that they're totally lovable, so they think that they have to be perfect and that's the way they'll get love. So, you know, you see people that dress beautifully, act beautifully,
yes.
You know, they're on time. They're rigidly controlling themselves all
okay.
the time.
Yes, yes, yes. So tell me, once these character defences start to be healed, what is the person like, for example, with this character defence, once this healing has come about?
Well, for the rigid, once they learn and they work through this rejection of the heart,
yes.
and feel the pain and feel the emotions around it and feel the tears, because they've probably locked so much grief in there.
Yes.
But as they can work through the energy layers, it's like they can start to feel their heart and they can commit to loving somebody else. Or, you know, otherwise they're only partially loving. They might have one foot in and one foot out.
Right, so it makes for better relationships in their life.
Absolutely. So I just want to say to anyone out there that feels that they have been a victim to abuse and trauma and neglect and withholding and cruelty and spite. And I would like you to feel, how do I feel about what happened to me? Really get in touch. Just sit down, maybe even right now, and think and feel the body. How do I feel about what happened to me? And when you come up with those feelings, this is the track that we go down with CORE, because to be a victim, you've been hurt. It hasn't been pleasant. And usually there's a cruel place inside of us that, even though in that moment we could not stand up for ourselves, there was no
right,
way to change
right,
anything.
Right.
But part of us would have liked to have fought. Our nervous system would have liked to have maybe punched somebody, said some harsh words, or maybe they even wanted to run away.
So that gets stuck inside of us somewhere, doesn't it?
It gets stuck inside, and that's what I was talking about even for myself. I felt a victim. A lot of things had happened in my life. I had a story. But when I got in touch with, okay, this is my story, I feel angry that somebody hurt me, that somebody neglected me, that somebody hurt my mother, and I didn't like it. And I'm angry about it. And when I was actually able to mobilize some of that energy, it took me out of my story. I was no longer stuck in the trauma of it. I was able to move the energy. So changing your energy, change your life, you move this stuckness by feeling some intense feelings, which takes you to another level. And you then become an empowered person, not a victim.
So what you're actually saying is that we're doing ourselves a disservice by trying to push all this down and push it under the carpet and with this sort of she'll be right mate attitude. Is that what you're trying to say, Leslie?
Absolutely. And even I hear people time and again say, oh, but it happened 30 years ago. And I just think, but it doesn't matter when it happened. It is still stored in the body and the memories, and you will be running your life with that story inside of you. And you will be telling people that story. You'll be telling yourself the story, but you're not changing it. And it's so empowering to look at your feelings, because in the end, the story has no power.
Yes,
you've actually
reminded me, Leslie, by what you've just said about the 30 years ago with my course that I was doing in grief counselling. And one of the first things we were taught was the question, you know, how long does it take a person to grieve? And, you know, people sometimes say to a person who's grieving, it's been a year or it's been 3 years, like, you know, let it go already. And they can't let it go. And you've just actually said the same thing about how when we do feel a victim, we carry that story, and we may have handled it intellectually to some degree by pushing it off to the side, but emotionally, in our quiet moments when we're sitting alone, it still does have that impact.
And when we least expect it, something else may come up in our life. You know, we may attract a similar situation because we've got this victim energy sitting inside of us. So straight away, you're suddenly somewhere and someone's doing something to you that's very similar to what happened earlier, because it's like you've got this energy stored. It's like a radar that goes out that says, I'm a victim. This is how you can treat me.
And of course, if we've pushed that first event or whatever, the second or third event aside, the thing that the person's doing to us, we wouldn't make the connections unless somebody points that out to us. Is that right?
Absolutely. And it's quite a course of being nearly a detective sometimes, because you go back, and sometimes it may be back, yes, 20, 30, 40 years. There's a beginning to this where a belief formed inside the person that keeps attracting, that says, someone can hurt me. I'm not meant to be honoured and respected. And we may have seen our mother. It could be as simple as seeing our mother being abused as well. And we see her suffering, but she lives her life according to that and doesn't change it.
Yes.
So this is giving you the opportunity to go back in history, right through every step backwards, to find the source. Where did this begin?
So obviously this would affect our relationships in a big way. Can you say something about that, Leslie? How it would affect our relationships, say, in the office or with a partner?
Well, I have so many, particularly females, clients that come to me and talk repeatedly about a woman in the office that they feel so confronted by and scared of. And in many ways, this person may represent an image of what their mother was like when they were young.
Mm-hmm.
And this person may be cold. She may be going through her own stuff. But what happens is, what worries me, is that people regress. They actually start to become young. They go back into the frozen state.
Yes.
And they're not dealing with it from a very empowered place. They're actually regressing. And many times they'd like to run out of that office and never come back again. So what I get them to do is start to feel, what is it that that person's doing or saying or being, that how's it affecting you?
So are you saying that their behavior in the workplace, even without them being aware of it, it somehow unconsciously regresses to the same kind of behavior that they would have gone to as a child?
Yes. The way their coping mechanism,
yes, okay,
is what they go back to. And if that was to freeze or to want to run when they were in a difficult situation, especially we underestimate how important a mother figure is. And there's so much stress in a woman's life, and sometimes she's not happy, and we put that on our children, and we want them to be a certain way, and we might want the best for them, but sometimes it's too much for the child.
Okay, yeah.
So women in general, I ask you to watch how you're speaking to your children. Note when you're angry and you're not happy. Note when you're doing too much. Because this really does have an effect. And we put out sometimes that we're angels and we're nice. But once again, it's a place of looking inside humbly. And going, what am I projecting out there?
That's right. I mean, as parents, as women, we could be having an off day. We could be right in the middle of, say, a heavy period, have bad PMT, whatever. And whatever we put out there, whether we be in an office, whether we be with a child, sometimes we are reacting rather than acting. And that reaction, that comes from that unconscious place, doesn't it?
It does. And next thing, we're both projecting, we're regressing. We don't even know what the issue is. So sometimes take a couple of breaths, go inside and see what is going on. And if you're not in a good mood that day, maybe let people around you know, and then they feel safe.
That's right. Yes, yes.
So it's all about the truth.
So what about in a relationship with our partner? Obviously, we would be doing some similar things with that, I would imagine.
Absolutely. I find couple work really fascinating because the couples come in and present their problems, and you sit down and each person speaks, And as their story unfolds, you see that what happened in their childhood, so to speak, what they were taught with mom and dad and their beliefs that they took on, they start to reflect in the relationship. For instance, as we were talking about before, the oral wound where you didn't get enough. Suddenly there's your partner and you want them to give you what you haven't got. And your partner may not like that. They don't want to be the one to fill you up.
That's right.
So aggression starts happening.
Mm-hmm.
And if they've actually had a hostile mother or similarly, we're in trouble because that person starts shutting down. They don't want to talk. They don't want to be demanded from. And the other person, who's empty and needy, actually becomes more desperate. So then we see that two people are on like a mouse wheel. They're just one's retreating and one is chasing.
Yes, you've actually brought some clients, old clients of mine, to mind here. And it took some time. This couple were particularly what I would call in denial. The lady, in fact, was very protective of her mother, and she had a very critical mother, and she was protecting her mother all the way as to how she was reacting with her partner. And it took some doing to get her to even acknowledge, you know, that, well, maybe mum was not this perfect person on a pedestal. Do you ever get that in your work? I'm sure you do, Leslie. Can you fill us in on that?
Absolutely. The denial is so thick because people don't want to show anything other than perfectionism in their families. So they're not going to tell you straight up what really happened. It may take a lot of work before you get to the absolute truth of what's gone on in people's lives.
Yes, and of course this impacts on the relationship.
It does. It impacts greatly and it puts so much pressure on each other.
So can you work with people? If you've got, say you've got a couple that come and one particular partner has got parents up on that pedestal and doesn't want to go there, is it still possible to work with them?
It's just step by step, Janetta. I just take it one step at a time, but I have an ultimate aim, but very respectfully, I am going to be working with them to reveal this place or to see if we can find it. But sometimes it's so painful, it's terrorizing. This is how they've survived their life, holding on to this.
That's right,
this
for
image.
Years and years.
So it's like, don't you dare try to find anything imperfect in this. I'm going to hold on to this.
Yes. Now, Leslie, we were talking about the woman and the mother. Can we say something about fathers and their impact on the child?
Fathers, please don't underestimate your role. You are so needed. I think mothers are fantastic at sometimes trying to be mums and dads, but you are a totally different energy. You are someone that's needed to help build the spine. Basically, the spine of a person and how straight it is indicative of how present the father is in a person's life, and you help build in those first 7 years the ability to go out into the world and be confident. You know, you're a teacher. You are a teacher to your son how to be a man, and you are a teacher to her, your daughter, as to how much you value her as a woman and how respectful you are of her. So father figures, if you can be present as much as possible. I know you're the breadwinners, but you are really needed.
So what you're saying is, in terms of, it's not just a matter of going out and playing football with your son. In terms of a little girl, the dad is the role model of the man that she may later be attracting into her life?
Absolutely. You are showing her how lovable she is, and she is going to be looking for someone like you. And unfortunately, I do get to see many people whose dads were not present for one reason or another, or, you know, the parents divorced and they didn't get to see dad. And it brings up an enormous amount of issues, and unfortunately, they take on beliefs that they're not lovable, so they get in second grade relationships. They're quite often abused.
Yes. So the traumas that happen to us when we're young, that are locked into our bodies and into our psyche and into our makeup, what would you say to people out there who don't have a therapist such as yourself and they're trying to deal with this? How would they go about perhaps getting a therapist, or if they're not in a position to do that for some reason, whether it be in terms of not having the capability in terms of paying for a therapist or not being able to get to someone or being in a remote area, what can they do to somehow lighten their load in terms of trauma they're carrying around?
I really feel that exercise is very important. Stretching.
Right.
So just to get up every day and to walk, to breathe, to even just to breathe into the belly for 2 or 3 minutes a day, to even squat
yes.
against a wall, just leaning there for 2 or 3 minutes, that will help build your inner ground. Eat as nutritiously as possible and watch your mind chatter. Watch what you're saying to yourself, because so many times we've got this inner critic going on, and it's like just sometimes getting off that cycle, being with positive people, getting on the internet. There's so much information out there, you know. Even if
yes.
I know for me at times I haven't always had the answer, and mainstream didn't really give me what I needed in my darkest
yes.
days. But I just thought, I'm going to find a way. And I really feel that if you get on the internet and start Googling, or even in the, you know, yellow pages, that there's free courses, there's free information.
So it's about growing, and it's about taking responsibility for ourselves and where we're at.
Yes, take responsibility, and you can change your life right now. Just start to tick some little boxes of things you like. And if you could think back to the child that you were when you were little and the things that you like to do, even if you do that, even if it's that child liked to go to the park and go on the swings or go swimming or bike riding.
Right,
It's simple things like that, because when you build happiness in your body, you actually build happy cells. You build happy mitochondria. And as
yes.
you build more of them, the body actually becomes happier, the soul is happier, the heart is happier.
Yes, yes. So, okay, Leslie, as you know, this Blog Talk Radio is part of The Difference TV. Tell me, we're talking about The Difference, and Leslie, I've seen the difference that you make in people's lives. Can you tell me from your own perspective, when you set out in your business with a client, when you have somebody come to you, what is the intention? What is the difference that you hope to make in people's lives with what you're doing? Because I can certainly feel the passion coming through your voice as you talk.
Well, having come through my own darkest days
mm-hmm.
and my own depression and my own hopelessness, I really want to inspire people. I want them to be able to build a relationship with me that they feel that they can trust me, and that hand in hand we can go together to seek out the sometimes not so nice places. But I come from a very unconditional place. That was part of my training,
mm-hmm.
intensely looking at my own stuff, and through my own journey I feel like I can sit with people and we can humbly work through this together. I'm really there for people. I want to shine a light into the world, and people that are struggling, and if anything I've said to you resonates, please, you know, come and see me, email me. And
can you tell people, Leslie, what is your website and how do they contact you?
My website is www.leslie Hughes, .com.au. My mobile number is 0407 934 4499.
And you're working once again for those people that are up the coast. Whereabouts are you based up the coast? What suburb?
I work from my home at Tumbiumbi. I have a beautiful home on a couple of acres, so it's very private, and
mm-hmm.
I think it's perfect for the work. And I also work at the Sydney Institute of Holistic Medicine, corner of Annandale Road and Booth Street, Annandale, and I'm there every Tuesday.
Excellent. Thank you very, very much, Leslie, for a very, very inspiring hour and for sharing what you do with Core Energetics with us today. And I would like to invite people out there that are listening to Leslie, if any of this has resonated with you, please give her a call. I can certainly vouch for the work she does, having done some Core Energetics work for myself in the past on a personal level, and it certainly does make a difference in your life. So thank you, Leslie, for joining us today.
Thank you, Janetta.
Bye for now from the Difference Radio Network. Thank you for joining us in opening humanity's heart and touching the lives of 6 billion people.